It's fantastic on Static on 2SER to be joined by both members of Audiobooks from London, David and Evangeline. G'day, g'day.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning to you guys, and it's so great to hear from you, and so fantastic to have a second Audiobooks album to dive into.
Thank you.
And you guys, I'm so relieved to hear that lightning can strike twice. Did you have any concerns that the first album was a happy accident?
Not really. We never really stopped creating. So it's not like we finished the first album and then took a break from making new stuff. So some of this is from quite early on in that process. We were quite keen to not have a big break, actually, for that reason, that it's like, ooh, how do we do this again?
I think you can tell that as well, David. There doesn't seem to be a huge break with the sound of the first record, and it's also a relief to hear that you guys didn't feel the temptation to unweird yourselves for album number two.
I didn't think that's possible, basically.
But it does happen, Evangeline, you know. Artists realise that there's an audience and suddenly they kind of compose themselves differently on a second record.
I mean, we made it also, just like David was just saying, that we never really stopped making. A lot of the tracks on this new record were actually made in rehearsals before gigs. So we were constantly using any time we had to prioritise recording, so we never kind of lost touch of that space. So I think maybe that helped.
Does that also help to put a bit more of a spur-of-the-moment vibe into a lot of the music?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah, because I would definitely get pre-gig excitement, you know, and nerves. I think
It was a way of channeling that, because Evangeline would be quite hyper before gigs, and it was a way of channeling that energy into something useful other than just ranting.
It feels also like that way of working is the way that it's been in Audiobooks from the start, because you initially came together as mates, right? Like you met at a party?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It all happened by accident. Like Evangeline just came to look at the studio. I was actually too busy. I didn't really have time to hang out. So I was doing wiring and doing work, and I just gave Evangeline some headphones and set her up with a synth. And then eventually I had her listen in. I thought, oh, that sounds good. I'll join in. And then we recorded it. I handed her a mic, put some vocals on it, and I was like, oh, we've got a track. And then it went from there, really. We hadn't really planned it at all.
It sounds like such a great way to form a band too. Nowadays, when you hear about people forming their bands in musical talent schools rather than in the kitchen at a party, it's nice to hear that that stuff does happen.
Exactly. I guess that is what happens a lot these days, isn't it?
Yeah, loads of the better things in my life actually always happen unplanned, and lots of my preconceived things that I try to do always fail.
And Evangeline, did you also come into this with designs as being a singer or more of a storyteller?
Yeah, that's the thing, because at the time when I met David, I just was studying at Goldsmiths. I was studying fine art, and at school I always struggled with writing in an academic way, but I liked writing and I loved lyrics, and I just found that whilst I was painting, I would kind of have moments of stress, because at Goldsmiths they tried to get us to sort of write academically about our work, and I just couldn't do it. I was like, I just make, and I don't know why I'm making. I just follow my gut anyway. And then I just thought, well, if they're going to try and get me to write, let me just have fun with it. You know, I'm at art school right now. Surely this is the space where I can try something different. And then I started writing those stories that are on the first record. And since David was my new friend that I just made, I just started sending them texts to him. And then
texts that came out of the blue. I was like, what? Why is this text? What's she on about? And he's like, okay, it's a little story. Okay, cool.
But the next time we hung out, it just made sense that I would just have a go at reading the stories to the music. But then, you know, I guess me and David ended up making something quite different.
Yeah, and it does feel like so many of these songs are tales or scenes or vignettes. I mean, David, is that why the band is named Audiobooks anyway? These are all stories?
Yeah, well, we had a few list of names and it seemed to work because they were little stories set to music. It was, and we thought, oh yeah, it sort of made sense. It was either going to be that or Eurotunnel, but I think we chose the right one.
And Evangeline, Audiobooks albums showcase some very English tales as well. Are some songs designed as etiquette-related class divide critiques?
Not intentionally. I mean, obviously, songs on English Manipulator you could read into a bit of that. But no, I think they're meant to be sort of playful and cheeky rather than critical.
Well, The English Manipulator on this record definitely has that vibe, though. It's the sort of story of this try-hard upper-class mansplainer.
Yeah, basically. The thing is, I feel like I could write about him well, because, you know, I've been an English manipulator myself, you know, so we could tap into that space quite well. I knew who that person was.
There was also a bit of that on the first record, Call of Duty Free. Had a bit of that in its tail as well. And I've got to confess, Evangeline, I kind of wanted a follow-up to that story on this record. You know, I wanted to know what happened to Lewis Lane. You know, did he ever make his flight?
No. In my mind, he didn't make the flight. So there we go. But yeah, maybe I should try and follow up some of those ones. I have many unfinished stories, but sometimes I like to leave them open just so that people have their own ending. But that must be kind of annoying.
That one was a real audiobooks cliffhanger, I got to tell you.
You've got to wait for season 3 for the resolution of that.
I'll hang in there. It also feels like on this record, AstroTurf, you guys have taken the opportunity to get more personal. A song like Farmer examines how to live a good life and is about learning from your ancestors.
Yeah, and I guess I was having all these thoughts. At art school, everything was about what was contemporary and what was new, and I was sort of interested in looking at older paintings and going back, and I was sort of felt like I was learning a lot more from going to the National Gallery and seeing Van Gogh paintings and just seeing how this guy just worked so hard his whole life with no success, really, proper success that he deserved, and just kept going at what he did and had his own mark. And, you know, at Goldsmiths, like, you don't talk about Van Gogh. Van Gogh's not interesting. Van Gogh's not someone to talk about now, you know, and I just found that really stressful because I just wanted to make work that makes you dribble, just like you look at it and that's the power. So I was constantly having these thoughts about, I feel like there's a bit of rebellion in man that wants to be like, no, our generation's better and we shouldn't look back. But I guess those lyrics came out maybe from thinking and experiencing that at art school a bit.
And on the flip side for this record, David, as well, I'm very pleased to see that sometimes these songs just have sex on the brain, because Blue Tits has got big asses, fingering, and the euphemism fish tank all in one song.
I tend to sort of sit back when lyrics are being done, and what happens is we tend to do like quite a few takes. There's quite a lot of stuff, and then the best bits get collaged in. Especially on this album, we'd go back and we'd tweak as well. But actually, I think that even though there's sort of sexual references in that song, that's not what the song's about, from my understanding of it. It's quite layered, and I think it's very much a critique of a certain type of person and a certain type of situation. But eventually, we'll definitely be able to explain that more than me.
Well, again, I don't think I'm critiquing. I think I'm trying to tap into a space of feeling that makes you unsettled. I'm purposely just want to sing things that make you feel a bit edged out, without kind of saying anything, to kind of also leave you feeling a bit like, what, you know?
We both definitely like it when a lyric is uncomfortable and you have to sort of sit with it and go like, you know, and it makes you just feel a bit uncomfortable. And we've definitely learned to sit with those lyrics and go with them. Sometimes they eventually don't end up on the record because they just really are too uncomfortable.
But did you learn that from doing some live shows after the first record as well and looking into the horrified faces of some audience members?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and I really enjoy that.
It's
for
so
me,
fun.
Being insane, I enjoy all those different tensions. I'm like, where am I going to pull them now? I can just see their faces just sort of like look super bewildered. Many a time, like David said, well, he said kindly that I get hyper before gigs, but often I feel super anxious. And the only way to deal with my angst is to kind of try and say things and come up with things in my head to inflict how I feel in the inside to those around me, you know. So I'm saying things like, come on, baby, give it to me fresh. Like this awful kind of scene of this dirty guy in some kitchen. It's like I just want to get the feeling out. then I feel better because other people feel a bit disgusted.
I'm happily disgusted by both your records. And David, I mean, we've spoken a bit about Evangeline's process for getting these songs together. I mean, for you, I know a lot of people must always want to probe you about your day job, which is production and mixing work. And you've worked with anybody and everybody from Frank Ocean to the XX and Caribou to even Australia's own Sarah Blasco. But I was wondering if working on all those records by other people and by very idiosyncratic artists has taught you that the best thing to do is to try to be unique in what you create.
Yeah, I don't think you can force it either. I think you have to be yourself. Like all the brilliant artists I've worked with, they are themselves. It doesn't mean to say they don't really work at it, but they don't, the bit of them that is themselves, they tend not to filter out or question. They know what that is. But then they also, all of those people, you know, they work hard at what they do. I've learned that as well. It doesn't just flow out and happen magically. I think, say, with audiobooks, the creative burst is there, but then it takes refining afterwards, and then it takes work. And then you have to be quite self-critical and willing to really be quite harsh on yourself. We were quite harsh on ourselves with this record, much more so than the first record. I think that was what changed in the process. So yeah, I've definitely learned to refine on the things that need refining, but then leave other stuff a bit wilder.
Well, David and Evangeline, it was so great to talk to you both about AstroTurf. We might get a little bit predatory and listen to First Move right now.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Thank you both for the tour.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is First Move from Audiobooks Now on Static. Thanks.
Thank you.
Lovely to chat with you. She's gone so far.